new political maps, the retirement of Congresswoman Brenda Lawrence, and Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib announcing she'll move to the new neighboring district, all this is leaving Detroit with a rare opportunity, a wide-open congressional seat. Speculation over who will jump in the race and who has the best shot is running wild. Could it be Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist, a young Detroiter up and coming on the Democratic political bench?
I am proud to be Lieutenant Governor of Michigan and proud to serve alongside Gretchen Whitmer and want to continue to do so. So no, I'm not running for Congress.
Okay, so that's a hard no from Gilchrist. But there are a few folks already on the hunt and more expected to jump in the coming days and weeks. This is going to be a fight.
You know, the normal sort of activist parties and machinery that allows for people to come to and get endorsed and get people out on the doors, all of that is in flux, which means you're going to have to rely more on dollars to reach people than you've ever had to do before.
Today, we'll talk about what's at stake with Michigan's 13th district and what it means to represent a city with an 80% Black population. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Here to help us wade through the political moment in the city are Greg Bowens, longtime political strategist and public relations specialist. Hi, Greg.
Hello, hello.
And Brandon Snyder is a grassroots political organizer in the city and co-executive director of Detroit Action. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, thanks, y'all.
So Brenda is retiring and Rashida is moving. Greg, did either of these announcements surprise you?
You know, I had written in Deadline Detroit that Brenda Lawrence was giving serious consideration to her future. I had heard through the grapevine people in her circle that she had been impacted by the loss of her sisters. She lost her last sister recently and, you know, and all this stuff, the coronavirus and January 6th and all that. And she had been doing public service for 30 years. And she worked for the post office. She was on the school board. She was on city council. She was the mayor of Southfield, first Black mayor of Southfield. And I worked on her campaign when she first ran for Congress. I remember how difficult it was to get in there because she was not the favorite. She was not the establishment candidate. It was very interesting. And so in either case, I had written that she was given serious consideration to her future because of those things and what that might mean for us as African-Americans in Detroit in particular and in Michigan in general. You know, we are we only have one Black person in the Michigan congressional delegation. And I know when we think of Rashida Tlaib or Hanson Clark or somebody like that, we think of them as being Black and brown people, minorities. But, you know, the truth is, and Congresswoman Tlaib will be one of the first ones to tell you that they are classified as white. And so the idea that representation for us as African Americans has been something that we have been taking for granted since, you know, Diggs back in 1955. And now we've gotten to the point where with Brenda Lawrence deciding not to run again and the way the districts have been changed and stuff like that, where it could possibly be for the first time since 1955 where we don't have any Black folks serving in the Michigan congressional delegation, which would be unique. In Ohio, they have 3-4. In Illinois, they have 3-4. You know, it's always been like that, you know, but for us, it means something different.
Brandon, when we talk about the people in this newish form of the 13th congressional district, who are we talking about when we say the people needing representation? I mean, I think what we're talking about is like on the northern border, Highland Park and Hamtramck, and then everything along like the southern border, East English Village, downtown, all the way to Delray, right? What's on your mind when you think about representation needs in all of these places?
I think that's right. And then when we think about that district, you know, one of the things that Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib mentions, you know, repeatedly is that it's one of the poorest congressional districts in the country. You know, it's a district that is, you know, has experienced both, you know, macroeconomic forces, you know, of divestment and flight, you know, from generations of, you know, manufacturing companies leaving the industry, leaving the area. But then you also experience, you know, some of the some of the positive, you know, phenomenon of immigration and population movement around the city, you know, from a rising Latinx community, a rising Bengali and Yemeni community in Hamtramck. You witness a number of, you know, Black folks who've lived in the city and have moved, you know, into the Points and into, you know, Highland or Harper Woods, which have now made, you know, Harper Woods, you know, a majority Black city. And so there are a lot of things that this incoming congressperson really has to think about and balance. And it's important that we have somebody who's in that seat, who's not just thinking about, you know, towing the party line, you know, passing votes just to pass votes. But how do we have someone that is paired with, you know, our congresswoman and, you know, over to the west and well, now potentially Rashida Tlaib, and then as well as our congresswoman over farther west, potentially Debbie Dingell? How do we have good allies that are working in lockstep with them to make sure that Black and brown Michiganders, you know, specifically in the city of Detroit, specifically in Highland Park and Hamtramck, and in Harper Woods, are actually getting the resources they deserve. You know, one of the things that, you know, for the organization that I work for, Detroit Action, where I'm the co-executive director, you know, we think a lot about how do we make sure that we have a congressperson who's going to engage in co-governance with the community. So those are the big things that are on my mind, is that, you know, if we're going to have to replace Brenda Lawrence, who, you know, whose office did do a really good job at constituent services, how are we going to make sure that we have someone that's thinking about the work that's needed back home here in the city, as well as in DC?
You know, I got to jump in right there, because I can appreciate what my man is saying, but, you know, representation matters. It matters. And in a city where you have, I mean, I understand my Yemeni brothers and sisters, I've met with them, I know what's going on. But, you know, when you have a population that is less than 2% of the population of the district that's being represented, you've got to wonder whether or not the representation of having African Americans really does matter. I get, like, poverty is a great common ground and structural racism and stuff like
that. I want to make sure that you hear me and that you don't misconstrue what I'm saying, is that I think that we're, you know, a 82% city that's full of African-Americans. And I think that it's important to have an African-American elected official. And I think that that African-American elected official has to also be able to balance the needs and concerns of the broader community, which includes poverty, as we're a largely impoverished community. And so when we think about who is elected there, it's important that that person is thinking about that, is working on that, and is actually promoting policy that is working to alleviate poverty. Like one of the things that's going to be tremendously important in 2022 or in 2023 when this term starts is, can we actually salvage any of the Biden presidential policy and policy agenda? We've had Build Back Better, you know, essentially die in the legislature. And many of the things that were in the Build Back Better policy platform, when we think about, you know, childcare, when we think about jobs, when we think about paid family leave, are things that those communities, Black, brown, you know, purple, blue, do care about and need in order to alleviate poverty. We still are missing policy on police reform. We're still missing policy on voting rights. So if a Black elected official isn't coming to Washington, D.C. thinking about those things, or actually working with the CBC or the Progressive Caucus to move them, then we're at a loss.
The beauty of the Democratic Party is that we can have these kind of discussions. The big tent where we are talking about my Yemeni brothers and sisters, or my Arabic brothers and sisters, or my Pakistani brothers and sisters, and even my Asian brothers and sisters, right? And the thing about it is, my man just said it, is that we are talking about these immigrant communities rising. And but do they have to rise at the expense of Black folks? Why do we have to lose representation in order for other people to have representation? And that's the kind of delicate balance that I think that we should be working at in terms of, you know, progressives and Democrats and stuff like that. And how do we bring up this representation in areas that where they are really represented at? There's no huge Asian population in, you know, in Detroit, but there is in Oakland County. Why aren't we working to get those folks elected there? And I say the reason why we're not is because it's not able to happen. because the structural racism that exists that precludes them from being able to fully participate happens more pointedly out there.
Time for a break. We'll be back with Greg Bowens and Brandon Snyder in just a moment. Stay put.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Guys, we gotta talk about candidates. We know for the 13th that Sri Thanadar, a businessman and state legislator, is in the race for sure. Former state representative Sherry Gay Degnogo has thrown her hat in. She sits on the school board currently. This is a coveted seat. I mean, what other names do you two have in mind? You know, folks who might be interested? Or this is, it's a strange year because there's been this corruption scandal on city council. It feels like that sidelined some people who otherwise might be interested. Greg, how about you? Do you see someone like maybe former state senator Ian Conyers getting into this race?
You know, there are a lot of people who are sharpening their pencils and trying to, you know, write out the calculus to see whether or not they could win. And the biggest impediment to it is money. Sri Thanadar has already said, I'm putting $5 million of money in this race, my own money in this race. That's going to buy a lot of ads and change a lot of minds. In the meantime, the rest of the folks are going to be scrambling. Who could do something like that? I don't know. We're talking, the city clerk is supposedly thinking about doing it. I mean, Adam Hollier, he's been raising his hand and, you know, pushing the issues forward. Why not? But the why not is the dollars. And with this kind of change that's going on, the 14th district is dissolving. The 13th is being reshaped. The 12th is being reshaped. You know, the normal sort of activist parties and machinery that allows for people to come to and get endorsed and get people out on the doors, all of that is in flux, which means you're going to have to rely more on dollars to reach people than you've ever had to do before.
Is it a problem for the political bench that the corruption scandal happened this close to the, you know, this opportunity coming up? Just to clarify, I mean the fact that there are people like Janae Ayers and Andre Spivey who are now not viable candidates for a race.
I don't think it impacts the viability of Black candidates. I think the key that we should think about, though, is that it impacts the number of people who can run and the number of people who we have as a, like an actual literal bench. And our bench is also, you know, for progressives, for people who are, you know, I'm 35. And as folks, you know, who are, you know, my age or, you know, a little bit older or even younger, the bench is, you know, incredibly thin. And so this is a really a call to, like, you know, we need more candidates and more people to step up and run. And the barrier that people face is money. You know, most people aren't independently wealthy. They aren't able to, you know, raise the money. If you're a first time candidate, you may not have a clue where to go. If you're a second time candidate, someone who's moved up from local races, now you're playing in the big times for the federal level, then it's a whole new ball game where, you know, you have to think about TV and you have to think about, you know, how are you spending on an entirely different strategy that you wouldn't have to run if you're running as a state rep in the city of Detroit. And then just one last point to that you made, I think, is from the perspective of the voter. You know, we work at the Detroit Action. We work with some of the most marginalized, some of the most infrequent voters who don't see themselves as, you know, a part of the system. People who are issue voters who care about housing, jobs, criminal justice, not because maybe they're bleeding hearts, but because they've experienced them. And these corruption scandals actually place them on the outside of thinking, why bother? Why engage in the system? And so, to Greg's point about political organizations, you know, being in flux, you know, it's going to be a need for grassroots organizations and labor organizations, you know, really to step in and fill that gap. And that's a challenge, especially in this moment where, you know, so many of the dynamics are changing and so many of the things that we're looking at the state and national level are also challenging.
Right. You know, because we talked about Build Back Better and why it's like, you know, a bust right now. I think it speaks to exactly what my brother is saying on the other end of this line here. And that is, we have not come together around messages that allow for everybody, no matter where they live, to be able to glom onto. You know what I'm saying? And so the 13th district in particular is going to be a pretty safe district, solidly Democratic. You would say the same thing for the 12th, which means the fight, the arguments happen in the primary. And I've heard candidates, you know, talking to two, Sheree and Sherry now talking about, oh, we need to work with people and blah, 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 across the aisle. This is a primary. Nobody wants to hear about you working with the insurrectionists. No, we want to hear about what you're going to do to make life better.
Not even realistic in DC in this moment, like right now. Like right. Paul Gosar isn't trying to work with you.
I need to drop one big caveat here in the middle of this, and that's just whether what we're looking at right now on the map is what we're going to be working with. For the past couple of years now, Mayor Mike Duggan has been telling anyone who would listen that the census count, the numbers that these maps are based on, was grossly undercounted for Detroit, for the city. A group of current and former state representatives filed a lawsuit challenging the new map, saying that Detroit, and specifically Black Detroit, is not going to be served. I wanted to know, as we put this discussion in park, what you think the chances are that the court challenge might change, that we might end up. It feels like the people who are interested in these offices are just assuming that they got to deal with what they got to deal with and going ahead. But I don't know, Greg, what's your take on the challenge?
It's dead in the water. Zero. Not going to happen. The Supreme Court has already said that you cannot create districts based on race and having that be the overriding criteria. And we just talked about, you know, in a supermajority Black district, how we're electing non-Black people. I ain't mad about that. I think, you know, shoot, Reseda, she stand up, fight the power, stand up for folks. I get that. But, you know, it's hard to make an argument that it's getting harder to elect Black folks because of the changing of this district when you have, you know, Reseda, when you have Stephanie Chang, when you have Sheree Thanadar, when you have non-Black folks who are getting elected in supermajority districts, even Mike Duggan, I mean, mayor, good mayor, blah, 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 still a white dude. You know, it's hard to talk about race. I wish that we didn't have to talk about race in this kind of fashion. You know, I wish the construct, the racial hierarchy had been completely dismantled. You know, but unfortunately, we have to still struggle with this until that day comes.
Brendan Snyder, I mean, some people have looked at this and said, you know, based on the Voting Rights Act, there might just be flat out disenfranchisement happening. What do you think? Are you assuming that we're going to have to go with the map that we have now?
I mean, there are challenges that are being made to the maps. And so I wouldn't count those out. You know, you look at states like Ohio, where they've made challenges to the maps. And, you know, that's now up to the Supreme Court. There's expectations that may happen in Florida, even with, you know, Republican governor, Republican, you know, House and legislature. So it's not, and then, you know, it happened in Pennsylvania a couple of years ago. And that's actually what's happening, you know, for this round of maps. So I wouldn't count that out. I would imagine that, you know, with these lawsuits, you know, anything is possible that it may end up going before the Supreme Court. You know, that said, I think that when we think about the maps and we think about, what they became. There are a lot of things that I don't agree with, you know, Senator Ollier on. There are a lot of things that consortium of elected Democrats, I don't agree with them on. And it concerns me when we start thinking about incumbency around, you know, map making process. But the one thing I do agree with them on wholeheartedly is that the VRA and how it was used and how it was thought of didn't really hit the spirit of the law. You know, we could have more VRA districts. We could make sure that, you know, Black representation, you know, isn't being dismissed at the expense of, you know, partisan fairness. And I think that that's one thing that they're going to have a really strong challenge, you know, coming to the courts this year.
I hate to do this, but we have to leave it there. It feels like there's a lot more to say. Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A quick postscript here. We got word this afternoon that Greg Bowens has picked up a client who may actually check some of these boxes for him. He's now advising the campaign of former Detroit Police Chief Ralph Godbee Jr. He announced at 3 p.m. today that he's running for the 13th congressional seat. That's the Stateside podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find more from Stateside at michiganradio.org. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend or maybe a fellow politico. Today's episode was produced by April Van Buren. Other producers on our show are Aaron Allen, Mike Blank, Mercedes Mejia, and Claire Morishima. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Our theme music is by 14KT, additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.